establishment dealing in any way with Sanders in a similar way?
Well, they're running scared now as a result of Michigan. That's why I got a smile on my face.
Where are you heading off to campaign with him next?
I'm heading off to Chicago. We're going to follow all the way to the White House. When we get to the White House, we're going to say, we got a president tied to the people. The people continue to put pressure because he's got corporate interests coming at him. He's going to hit white supremacy, male supremacy, homophobia. And most importantly, he's going to call into question some of the American imperial policies, the issues of empire.
We're going to leave it there. I want to thank Nick Bauman, senior enterprise editor at the Huffington Post. We'll link to your piece at Secretive Meeting, Tech CEOs and Top Republicans Commiserate Plot to Stop Trump. And Professor Cornell West of Union Theological Seminary. That does it for our broadcast. We have three job openings at Democracy Now! Check our website at democracynow.org, broadcast engineer, director of finance and operations, and director of development. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nirmeen Shakes. I'm Al Koff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is now 8 o'clock. We'll have some announcements and then talk radio with Paul Rowland. But first, the information.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Winter Blues Festival, Saturday, March 12th at the Elks Lodge and Ballroom, 13121 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard in Milwaukee. Performing at this year's festival will be Candy Kane, Kara Granger, Robin Barrett, and Coyote Kings with Tiff Dames and more. The Winter Blues Festival is a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank and United by Music North America. It all happens on Saturday, March 12th at the Elks Lodge and Ballroom on McLaughlin in Milwaukee. Doors open at 2:30 and the music starts at 3. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Fade to Black, a book release event for political prisoner Jalil Muntakam on Thursday, March 10th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. This political education and community event will promote the recent book release of Escaping the Prison, Fade to Black. Jalil is a political prisoner who organized with the Black Panther Party in the Bay Area and was underground with the Black Liberation. This event will feature local talent and activists including Black Butterfly, Kent Ford, Walida Imarisha, and many more. Again, that's Fade to Black, a book release event for political prisoner Jalil Muntakam on Thursday, March 10th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th in Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S. made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, as always, Paul Roman. Glad to be here. And that was a group called Mana with Cuando los Ángeles Lloran, When the Angels Cry, a song about the assassination of Brazilian rubber tapper, labor activist, environmental activist Chico Mendes, murdered in December of 1988. And since then, hundreds of environmental activists in Latin America, mostly, but around the world, have been murdered by corporate and governmental agents and interests who refuse to change their ways and acknowledge the need to change our ways. So we are going to be talking about one of the most recent victims of this these brutal government and corporate policies, Berta Cáceres from Honduras, an indigenous and environmental leader. She was gunned down in her home in La Esperanza, Honduras, on Thursday, just a little less than a week ago, March 3rd. And she was 44, the same age as Chico Mendes when he was murdered. We'll be talking about that with our guest, Beverly Bell, on the phone with us, who worked closely with Berta Cáceres through her group, Other Worlds, Otros Mundos. We'll be talking a lot more about that. I'll be giving a little more of an introduction. Real quick, I just want to mention a couple of community events coming up. You just heard about the event at the Social Justice Action Center tomorrow evening, 400 Southeast 12th, with local activists and artists in support of political prisoner Jalil Muntakim, a book release and fundraiser. And that's from at 7 p.m. tomorrow at the Social Justice Action Center. Friday from 6 to 8 at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont. City Repair is proud to host an evening with Starhawk, beloved activist, author, and elder of City Repair and many other eco-social organizations' efforts here in Portland and around the world. She will weave themes from her newest book, City of Refuge, with a powerful and heartfelt look at what it will take for us to make the changes needed for a widespread shift to earth care, including the necessary ingredients of self-care and a good recipe for healthy group dynamics. I'm not sure if there are tickets left, but you can go to info@cityrepair.org or visit bit.ly/Starhawk, City Repair, March 2016. I'll have this all up on my page on the for this show on the website, kboo.fm. That's this Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. at Tabor Space with Starhawk. On Saturday, March 12th, 8 p.m., Anaris Info Shop and Community Space will be having a benefit fundraiser for the space. There'll be a night of folky goodness to benefit the space. It was broken into twice recently, and they want to support radical spaces existing and thriving. Anaris is seeking donations to fund barring the windows and help with some bills. Dog Tooth and Nail, Porch Cat, Bird Teeth, and Shoot Dang will all be playing at this event. 8 p.m. Anaris at 7101 North Lombard Street in Portland. And with that, as I mentioned, Honduran indigenous and environmental leader Berta Cáceres was gunned down in her home in La Esperanza last Thursday. She had been in the middle of a decade-long struggle to stop a dam project in the territory of her indigenous Lenca people, a joint venture between the Chinese company Sinhydro. The World Bank and Honduran company Desarrollos Energéticos had plans to construct four dams on the Gualcarque River with no consultation with the local people. Cáceres had worked with the community to organize legal actions and local meetings to oppose the project from 2013. She led her organization, the Council of Popular Indigenous Organizations of Honduras, and the local community in a year-long blockade at the construction site to prevent the companies from accessing the land. Despite continual threats and harassment, removal of protesters by security officers, and three shooting incidents which left three activists dead and six injured, the protests continued. And in late 2013, both Sinohydro, I'm sorry, that's what it is, and the World Bank's International Finance Corporation withdrew due to the opposition, though the Honduran company continued to push the project. Throughout the campaign, Caceres and other organizers were often intimidated by the Honduran military and received frequent death threats. Last year, Caceres received the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize for her two decades of activism and leadership. Our guest, Beverly Bell, works with the group Other Worlds, Otros Mundos, which has collaborated closely with the Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras. Bell repeatedly warned of threats to Caceres prior to her death. This is from their website. Other Worlds is a women-driven education and movement support collaborative. They compile and bring to light alternatives flourishing throughout the world, ones opening spaces for economic, political, social, and environmental justice and meaningful democracy in order to inspire and incite others. They also directly support the movements that are propelling the alternatives. With that, good morning, Beverly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, and first, I'm so sorry about what happened to, I imagine, your friend, your colleague, certainly, Beverly Bell. I would like to play a few minutes of this wonderful video that actually has her voice and other local activist voices in a couple minutes. But first, you know, just tell us about her, what it was like working with her, what kind of person she was.
I would love to, and wow, it was powerful and chilling that you started the show off with the song of When the Angels Cry. I got chills all throughout me. She was what we would call an angel in earthling parlance. It's really sick that she's dead. Right, so we have been very, very close friends and colleagues for just about 20 years now, almost 20 years. And Berta was one of the most extraordinary people I have ever met, and I have a job and a life that allows me to meet extraordinary people all the time. Berta was committed to her toes to indigenous rights, to the sanctity of Pachamama, or Mother Earth, to participatory democracy, that is not like the sham that we call democracy in this country, but one in which indigenous peoples and small farmers and low-income women and LGBTQ people all have equal say in what's happening in their country and can all benefit from the fruits of that country. Berta, in about 20 years ago, I'm not sure of the year at this moment, but started the organization that you mentioned called the Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras. And this was really something remarkable. This is at a time when the indigenous peoples of Honduras did not feel pride in being indigenous. They certainly had no power. They had no rights. There were no legal protections to their sovereignty over their own lands and waters. And Berta really became a national leader and a global leader in exactly those struggles. She stood up against the World Bank, against the United States government, which has six military bases in Honduras and has always considered Honduras its client state and still does, and I hope we'll get a chance to talk about the role of the U.S. in Berta's killing, because you can draw a straight line from Washington to her corpse, and that's not hyperbole.
Yes, we'll definitely talk about that.
Good. She was a strong feminist in a very male-driven movement and society. She just has given everything she had, and unfortunately, we all knew that she would not die of old age. I actually started writing her eulogy several years ago, and she was everywhere. She was a committed grassroots leader and always held accountability to her people, relied on consensus with folks who had such a huge education and experiential gap from hers that she did not need to consult all the time, but she did. And on the other hand, she was meeting with the Pope. She was meeting with worldwide leaders, government officials, all over. She was like 10 people in one. Imagine 10 of the best justice organizers and advocates you've ever met in the world and roll them into one little body, and that was Berta Cáceres.
So she was obviously an incredibly serious threat to the people who wanted to continue those kind of projects. That 10 years she spent on that against that dam project, but obviously she's been at this a lot longer and made quite a few enemies, I'm sure. We had a caller already. I guess I kind of, instead of making them wait about 10 minutes before we do that clip, let's just go right to that first caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. This is Brian. How are you today?
Okay.
Good. So listen, I definitely wanted to make this comment because I think it's ripe that my skin just absolutely crawls when I think of Honduras. And when I saw the coup that happened, you know, and what they did to Manuel Zelaya and Hillary Clinton cheering it on as Secretary of State. And she just literally, you know, her comments were, you know, we're going to make sure this guy does not get in, back in again. And, you know, we're going to bring, you know, whatever to Honduras. And you know, with Brazil, Zelaya had to go to Brazil. And, you know, and Brazil objected to the behavior of the military in Honduras. And this is, you know, this is a result. This is directly the result of U.S., you know, intervention into another government. And this sort of thing has been happening in all over Central America. And, you know, I think during this election season, I wish people would just, I wish somebody would play that comment by Hillary Clinton, you know, about Honduras and then how brutal everybody had to suffer after the military took over. But anyway, that's my comment.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling. You want to just go off on that briefly,
sure.
Beverly?
Yes, I would love to, and thank you for calling in. You're absolutely right. Hillary Clinton, in her role as Secretary of State at the time, was the chief architect of the U.S. role in the coup d'etat against the last democratically elected president that Honduras has had. In her most recent book, she actually bragged about her role, and there are reams of documentation of exactly how she engaged to ensure that Zelaya was ousted. And in fact, Berta had a role in that too, because Berta was at the lead in Honduras for two things. One was a movement for land reform, and second was a movement to what they called refound the country, something I wish we had here in this pathetic nation, politically pathetic. This was an idea that really took off to have a new constitution, because the constitution that existed and that continues to exist was not written by the people, and it certainly did not serve for the people. It was all about the elites who had drafted it way back when. So Zelaya was, although not a progressive at all, he was in fact open to these ideas, and he and Berta had a close relationship, and he was open to other members of other social movements. And I should add that Berta was a leader, but that there was a powerful social movement in Honduras, and still is, though it's been weakened. And so it was in response to this that the elite in the country and the Honduran government, and parts of the Honduran government and the U.S. government flipped out and thought, oh my gosh, we can't have, you know, any radical government in this country that, as I mentioned, has always served as the U.S. foothold in Central America, from which they have controlled not only Honduras, but the other nations of the region as well. And so it was in that context that the coup d'etat happened. And then ever since then, the elections have been completely fraudulent, as the U.S. and the Honduran elite have guaranteed that they can still control what happens in that country.
And again, what year was the coup?
2009.
So that was a very recently, obviously, under the Obama administration, of course, because that's when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So this is really interesting. Okay, just step back again a second. So Honduras is between which countries?
oh man, my brain is going to go cuckoo, but it's right next, what's really important is that it's next to Nicaragua, and I'm sure that all of your listeners know, or anyone over a certain age, that it was the base of the U.S. Contras, the pathetic sort of Nazi effort to take over the Sandinista revolutionary regime. And actually, Berta loved to say, she always said, the U.S. knows us for two things, as being the base of the U.S. Contras and for Hurricane Mitch. But she was working, and many others in Honduras continue to work, for a society where that proud and powerful social movement can come to the fore, because people in the U.S. do not know about that.
So basically, what you're saying is this historical perspective on this, that she was part of a growing popular movement that essentially helped lead to Zelaya coming to power. I mean, is that an oversimplification?
Yes, they voted for him, but not enthusiastically.
Okay.
But once he got into power, then he began to move slightly to the left and became open to their ideas.
Okay.
That is when the U.S., Hillary Clinton, had to step in, and the elite of Honduras had to step in because they could not relinquish control.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my engineer, Ross, actually brought up on YouTube some Hillary Clinton, a clip of Hillary Clinton talking about the coup in Honduras. Did you think that's worth hearing?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, he's on the phone right now. I guess we'll have to wait until he gets off the phone so we can go to that clip. Ross, let's go to that clip. Ross?
We do think that this has evolved into a coup. The president, as you know, has been expelled. Another person has been substituted for the president. But we think that this is a fast-moving situation that requires constant attention, which we are certainly providing to it, along with our bilateral partners and through the OAS as our multilateral vehicle.
International community, do you plan on recognizing the government of President Ahmadinejad? And we've seen this crisis over the last few weeks.
The United States has been working with our partners in the OAS to fashion a strong consensus condemning the detention and expulsion of President Zelaya and calling for the full restoration of democratic.
Actually, we hadn't really heard that, so it may just be diplomatic speak, so I don't think it's actually necessarily worth our while. Go ahead.
Sorry. It's quite relevant, because in the beginning she did call it a coup d'etat.
Okay.
Over the next 2 months, she backed off step by step until by the end of the day she actually said the situation was, quote, murky. So it's good to know that she had on record what happened as a coup d'etat. But being the woman that she is, that was changed, and the U.S. did go on to work very, very closely with this regime, and still does. And maybe this would be a good time to talk about what's actually happening in Honduras, the crisis that's there right this moment in the wake of Berta's death.
Yeah, let's do that. And I still do want to play that Goldman Prize video, because it has her voice. It's
okay.
Really wonderful. It really gives a really good background on the story. But let's go to that first.
Great.
So let's go to that, get that clip set up there, Ross. And again, the number is 503-231-8187 to call in.
Order.
We'll open up in a few minutes here. Our guest is Beverly Bell, who works with the group Otros Mundos, Other Worlds, who work closely with the recently slain Honduras indigenous leader and environmental activist Berta Cáceres. She was gunned down in her home in La Esperanza, Honduras, just last Thursday. So let's go to that clip right now.
Bueno, este río tiene una importancia ancestral, espiritual, porque
this river has ancestral and spiritual importance to the Lenca people because it's inhabited by the female spirits. These female spirits guard the rivers.
Custodian los ríos.
The Gualcarque River is also used for growing food and gathering medicinal plants. And of course, is vital to the entire population downstream. I believe it signifies life.
After a military coup in 2009, the Honduran government awarded concessions for 47 dams to power hundreds of new mining projects. Chinese engineering giant Sinohydro joined with the Honduran company to build a dam near Rio Blanco. The Akwesasca Dam would impact hundreds of Lenca people.
This was a violation of indigenous rights from the start, because the National Congress granted a concession without providing free, prior, and informed consent.
No es un crimen defender.
Aquí donde estamos, donde estoy sentado aquí, aquí era una gran frijolera cuando entró.
We had beans planted right where I'm standing, but when the company came in, they ran their tractors over the fields, destroying everything.
Por eso nos encaprichamos y estamos organizados.
We got mad. Then we decided to organize ourselves with COPIN.
COPIN, an indigenous rights organization, co-founded by Berta, organized the Lenca people around their internationally recognized rights.
In more than 150 indigenous assemblies, our community decided that it did not want that hydroelectric dam.
Berta filed complaints with the Honduran government and organized peaceful protests in the nation's capital. As her visibility increased, she became a target for the government.
We denounced this dam and were threatened with smear campaigns, imprisonment, and murder. But nobody heard our voices until we set up a roadblock to take back control of our territory.
For well over a year, the Lenca maintained the roadblock, withstanding harassment and violent attacks. Tragically, Rio Blanco community leader Tomas Garcia was shot by the Honduran military at a peaceful protest.
Seeing this man murdered, the community became indignant, forcing a confrontation. The company was told that they had to get out. And that is how Sinohydro left Rio Blanco. But it cost us in blood.
Sinohydro terminated its contract, citing ongoing community resistance. The World Bank later withdrew its funding over concerns about human rights violations.
They can attack her. They can even kill her, as they have tried. But her life transcends this moment in time. This struggle is a symbol of community resistance that inspires people across Honduras and around the world.
No podemos ser ingenuos ante ese poder. Cuando iniciamos la lucha de Río Blanco,
when we started the fight for Rio Blanco, I would go into the river and I could feel what the river was telling me. I knew it was going to be difficult, but I also knew we were going to triumph, because the river told me so.
For outstanding environmental achievement in South and Central America, the 2015 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Berta Cáceres, Rio Blanco, Honduras.
And we're back. That was a video produced at the awarding of the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize in 2015. And I guess I could say prophetically, but obviously not too prophetically, because everybody knew that she was at risk of being murdered. But they openly talked about it in video, and it did come to pass last week. And we are with Beverly Bell talking about this and talking about the ongoing resistance. People are obviously not going to give up because one of their own, although she was a very important figure. So what is going on right now in Honduras?
Oh, thank you for playing that. I've probably seen that and heard it 20 times, but it just strikes deeply every time. Yes, what is going on right now is a human rights crisis of international proportion, not just the death of Berta, of course, but what happened to the man in whose arms she died and the sole witness to the murder, and what has happened to her organization since then. So a very, 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 very close friend of Berta's and mine, and also the co-founder of my organization and one of my board members at Other Worlds, is named Gustavo Castro Soto. Gustavo is the Mexican homologue of Berta, if you will. He has done extraordinary work in Mexico to fight against dams, to fight against multinational extraction, and he is also the coordinator of what's called the M4, the Mesoamerican Movement Against the Extractive Mining Model, which is a network of all of the groups in Mesoamerica, which, by the way, is Central America plus Southern Mexico, all of the groups who are fighting dams. And, of course, Copin was very active in this. So because of the risk to Berta's life, and I will add that the last 2 weeks of her life, she just got almost daily and very active, aggressive death threats. Gustavo went to her town of La Esperanza and was staying with her to provide accompaniment, something that many of us have done over the years to try and provide a bit of a protection. What it did not work that night. Gustavo was there. I have not been able to speak with him because he's been locked up by the Honduran government ever since, so I don't know all of the details. I did get one note from him that he sent out to a bunch of us, the only message he's been able to get out, in which he said that he was shot twice himself, although he is in okay physical condition. Berta died in his arms. Then he was picked up. Oh, he feigned death, and the two death squad members sent by the Honduran government, with backing by the dam company that you just heard about, called Aguazarca, which, by the way, and most cynically, sent a note of condolence about how sad and tragic Berta's death was, as did the Honduran government, as did the U.S. State Department. Cynicism knows no bounds, I guess. So Gustavo was then picked up by the Honduran government for, quote, questioning. He was held for 3 days in conditions that constitute psychological and some physical torture. I'm not free to share them until he leaves the country for his protection, but I will just mention that he was not given any food or allowed to sleep for 2 days, and there was more that was worse. Then there is this really wild, right out of an international spy movie, this whole showdown between the Mexican and the Honduran governments, because Gustavo was a Mexican citizen. He was finally allowed to leave with the Mexican ambassador and made it to the airport, hugged the ambassador goodbye, and had just made it to the point of going through customs when a group of Honduran authority thugs stepped out and grabbed him. There was a showdown between the Mexicans and the Hondurans at this point, shouting at each other. Somehow he ended up with the Mexican ambassador and went back to the embassy, where, of course, as a Mexican citizen, he was provided safe haven. However, in a gross violation of his rights, the next day the Mexican ambassador handed him back to the Hondurans, who have taken him back to the town of La Esperanza, which I should add is a small town run on sort of the country sheriff model. You could imagine the Corleones running the town. Gustavo is back there, again locked up. He is denied presence of an attorney. He is denied access to anybody. And the Honduran government has said that he will not be allowed to leave the country for 30 days. And the one message that he sent out, he said, quote, "They tried to execute me, and they are still trying to execute me." And he also said, "My life continues to be in grave danger."
So I assume there must be supporters, at least, you know, holding vigil outside the jail or something?
That's right. He's actually in the courthouse. Yes, they're outside the jail. I just saw just before you called that the UN Commission on Human Rights has sent a representative. The Inter-American Court of Human Rights has sent a statement. International pressure has been coming from everywhere. But unfortunately, the State Department is highly involved. They have stated that they are cooperating with the Hondurans in the investigation, which is a chilling thought. And the Tigers, which are a SWAT team that was created, funded, and trained by the U.S. This is the sort of elite sniper unit, or sort of the anti-riot team. I mean, those who are dispatched against citizens who are making political trouble, is, quote, guarding him, which is horrific. He's being forced at the same time that he's being guarded by probably machine guns all around him to wear a bulletproof vest, which I can only see as more psychological torture. And, yes, I was told by someone who was there that there is a team of U.S. guys resembling CIA agents. Her description was FBI. We don't know who they are, but that are in on the interrogation. So anyone who knows the role that the U.S. has played in Central America, with the School of the Americas, too, where I should add most of these thugs working for the Honduran state, were trained, it's horrifying. So that's the second element after the death of Berta, is what is happening to Gustavo, who, again, is a powerful, powerful, powerful leader in this fight. And then the third element is what has happened to the Council of Popular Indigenous Organizations of Honduras, or COPIN, the group that Berta led, which is that they are being framed as the murderers, including the number two in the organization was jailed for 2 days as being a suspect, quote, in a crime of passion, if you can believe. Others have now been detained. They are being interrogated. They are not allowed to have their lawyers present. And what the government is trying to do, left hand, right hand, is to kill the leader on the one hand and then off somehow the rest of the leadership by tying them into the government's very own murder. So it's horrible. There are action alerts circulating all over the web, and I encourage your listeners to please take action. They can also go to my website where we will post an action alert in about 2 hours, and that is otherworldsarepossible.org, and please take action. Gustavo's life depends on it, and the lives of the leaders of COPIN depend on it.
Okay, we'll give all that information again at the end of the show and talk a little more in depth about how people can get involved at various levels. I do want to ask you, just keep this in mind. Actually, I had the question in mind, but I'll remember it. But we did have a caller, to call in, it's 503-231-8187. We're already, we only have about 20 minutes left. It's gone by quick, but Sean is on the line. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, good morning, Paul. Good morning, Beverly.
Good morning.
I guess my first comment on all this is we're seeing a new era and return to Eduardo Galeano's Open Veins of Latin America, and it's stretching all the way down into South America, of course, and that is of the history of, you know, from Spain to England to the U.S., and now the key word that was used in that video, of course, is that China is now involved, and of course the U.S. is heavily involved in supporting China's growth in these new areas where they have expertise, because they have a lot to gain economically working together. Excuse me, I have a bad cold, so I apologize. But part and parcel of what's happening in Honduras is, ironically, I was just reading an article in the New York Times yesterday having to do with Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and the talk about that there's contra elements and new fighting rebels in the mountains that want to bring that back, which is really not surprising, no matter what the New York Times wants to say about it or not. The fact is that one of the things they didn't even mention in the article, and a lot of people don't even hear about, is, of course, that China is funding and building with Nicaragua a new canal that will outdo the Panama Canal. that will stretch all the way across Nicaragua and include Lake Nicaragua. So this whole new political thing, what's coming down is we're seeing a whole new wave of going into Latin America and South America and stealing the riches that were left and finding new riches to mine and undermine, so to speak. So anyway, it's just very sad to hear what's going on. And at the same time, the U.S. has a lot of experience in those areas and I believe is helping China and being a part of what's going on.
Okay.
So, anyway, thanks.
Well, thank you. I guess that kind of leads to the question I did remember what I had, which is why now? It seems like this is a concerted effort, not just specifically at Berta Cáceres, but at her organization, at all the resistance. I guess they lucked out that Gustavo Soto, another important organizer, was there with her, that they could target him as well. Why do you think this is why do they come down at this particular moment, do you think? Do you have an idea?
I do have an idea. Well, first, Sean, your caller was absolutely right that this is an historical trajectory that has been going on forever. It never ceased. It has just reached a new level because of the huge increase in extraction that is happening on indigenous lands around the world. And the reason indigenous lands is, of course, because indigenous peoples are the only ones who have protected their lands and who have natural resources, or what indigenous people call riches of nature, on their territories. So Central America is actually sort of ground zero for a lot of extraction and, quote, development. And this involves, on Copin land and others, it involves mining, logging, building dams, stealing indigenous knowledge, otherwise known as intellectual property rights, and it is just ramping up and up and up. And the gold mines are owned by Canadian corporations almost exclusively, and they're all over Central America. And then the U.S., of course, also has a lot of corporations there backed by the U.S. government.
You know, I just want to jump in real quick. You know, you mentioned Canada, and I focused quite a bit on things in Canada, the tar sands, the huge mine tailing spill that happened up there last year or the year before, last year, I think. You know, we focused a fair amount on cable on that, and I haven't focused as much on what's going down, very little, on what's going on in Central America. And I think it's a high time I did, obviously, from what you're saying. But the fact that people may not know it, that Canadian mining corporations are all over the world. There are some of the major, major players. So I just wanted to put that in there. But please continue.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Why now is that those Indians got a little too uppity for the likes of the Hondurans. They could not stand the fact that these illiterate indigenous peoples in this village of Rio Blanco were able to hold off this dam corporation for upwards of a year and a half. It just drove them wild. And the way this has happened, it's the most beautiful thing. I was there and saw it, is that indigenous peoples, as Bertha mentioned, in the village next to the river where this huge dam was going to go in, dug a little trench. They put up a fence made out of little sticks, little wires, and the Honduran flag and the Copin flag, and they just went out there every day for a year and a half. Little children, grandfathers, the whole gamut, nursing mothers, they were out there every single day, and they did not allow the company to send in its machinery. Well, this just drove the powers that be wild. And I would like to mention that this is one of 49 dams that are either under or in the works, in planning, or under construction on Copin land alone. 49, if you can imagine. And there are hundreds and hundreds of mines on indigenous lands that are either underway or in planning throughout Honduras. So it was this and the attention that Berta got, largely through the Goldman Award, they couldn't stand being bested by people who were just supposed to be docile and silent. So Berta continued to get more and more international attention, and it caused the Honduran government and the dam companies and the other transnational capital, which this is, of course, all about, it just drove them mad. And so they had to get rid of her, and they did. However, they did not get rid of her spirit or her message or her legacy. If you could be in my inbox any day now and see how many countries are engaged in fighting back right now, it is unbelievable. I have gotten messages yesterday from the Philippines, as well as South Africa, as well as Argentina, just to give you an idea. So their plan, the government's plan, that they could kill Berta by killing her body has backfired. It's never, you know, violence never works. And this is not the end of Copin, and it's not the end of this horrible fight against capitalism. And Berta and Copin are very clear that this is all a fight against capitalism.
And once again, you are listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. My guest is Beverly Bell with Otros Mundos, Other Worlds, a group that has been active in solidarity with the people of Honduras and maybe other places. I haven't actually gotten a chance to talk to you too much about that. Maybe we can. We only have 15 minutes left. Time flies. The number to call is 503-231-8187. If you have a question or comment, as always, there's so many different directions to go. I have a number of articles about the sharp rise in murders of environmentalists over the past decade. 2010, 2011, I guess, were the highest years, but it continues unabated. We're talking about a victim of that violence against environmentalists and indigenous people, often the same people, as you were mentioning. We're talking about Berta Cáceres from Honduras. 900, a global analysis shows at least 908 people are known to have died since 2002. That's people fighting industrial logging, mining, and land rights. Latin America and Asia Pacific are particularly hard hit. And that's one aspect. Another aspect, as Beverly was mentioning, was the role of the United States in not only the Honduran coup, but of course, all over Latin America. It seemed for a time as if there was kind of a fight back, a new wave of sort of nationalist, semi-socialist movements, both popular and elected, against United States hegemony. Perhaps that's being rolled back. Certainly it's being rolled back. I guess it's a continual back and forth. And obviously, as Beverly was saying, the importance of the remaining areas either owned or controlled or occupied by indigenous people as being key places, because they have some of the last remaining that haven't been already tapped out riches. That are the last riches being gone after by the capitalist system, just like the tar sands in Canada and the deep oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico and the fracked gas all over the United States. They're going after the last. So it's a grim picture, but people are standing up and they need support. So if we have any callers, 503, let's go to James. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Paul. Thank you for the great program. I just wanted to relate from the Democracy Now! Program this morning. Dolores Huerta from the United Farm Workers indicated that she supports Hillary Clinton. And I was just wondering if we might sort of interrelate these issues regarding her role as Secretary of State. And that's pretty much my comment.
Okay, Beverly?
Yes. Greg Grandin wrote a piece in The Nation that came out right after Berta's death, and it started with the following paragraph. Hillary Clinton is great for women, just ask Berta Cáceres, but you can't because she's dead. So I find it very sad. I have tremendous respect, of course, for Dolores Huerta, co-founder of the United Farm Workers, but I find it very sad that women are being essentialist and assuming that because Hillary Clinton has the same genetic woman biology as they, that she is somehow going to stand for the interests of any of us. I also work deeply, deeply, deeply in Haiti and have for 35 years, and we have seen Hillary Clinton play the exact same role in Haiti as she has in Honduras, and people have tracked her similar role all throughout. So I am, of course, not in any ways encouraging anyone in the world to vote for Donald Trump, but we still do have a chance to have a candidate who stands for integrity. And my goodness, it is my hope that whether she's Democrat or Republican, woman or man, that Hillary Clinton does not take the White House, because we have already seen in her role as Secretary of State and in her role as wife of the scurrilous Bill Clinton, who has gone around just making huge profit off of countries everywhere and been involved in the most heinous deals, which unfortunately I have to know a lot about. If she were actually chief of state, I cannot imagine the effects on people all around the world fighting for justice.
We only have a few minutes left. There's one thing I really did want to mention. It kind of is a separate issue, but I think it's related. I had talked to you, Beverly, when we talked on the phone, that I want to mention an issue that's in a way similar, because certainly similar. It's another blockade by an indigenous group, and this one is in Arizona. The Apache people are occupying a place called Oak Flat down in near not too far from Phoenix. It's directly southeast of Phoenix, north of Tucson. It's an area that was part of the San Carlos Apache Reservation, originally got taken out partly because there was a copper in that area. There's a lot of copper mining already in that area. And they are, it's an area that's considered a culturally important and sacred to the Apache people. It has great historical significance. It's a place where there's water year-round. Anyway, it's an amazing place. And a friend of mine who I worked with on the Mount Graham issue years ago, Wenzler Nosey, who was a tribal councilman. He had been tribal chairman at one time. And he has been leading the fight against the telescopes on Mount Graham and on this issue. And it's another, it's an important issue regarding, it's a very significant issue nationally, because it was part of the Tonto National Forest and got taken out of it in a land exchange and given to Resolution Copper, essentially, a subsidiary of the multinational conglomerate Rio Tinto, as a result of an amendment tucked into the National Defense Authorization Act of 2014. So it's a year anniversary. They just celebrated of their occupation of Oak Flat. So they're holding off the mining right now. Another issue of where multinational corporations are going after some of the last of resources that are on indigenous, traditional indigenous territory. So there's many things you can do about that. You can call me at the front desk afterwards. I can give you all the information about that and anything else. You listen on the show at 503-231-8032. Go to kboo.fm and look up this the page for this show under the archives, Wednesday Talk Radio. And you can also contact your congressional representatives, ask them to co-sponsor the Save Oak Flat Act, H.R. 2811 and S. 2242, and much more. And let's go to our next caller, Jinx.
Paul, hi. I'm so glad that you and Beverly are talking about this amazing woman. I just wanted to add that I was in Honduras in January, and the corporate presence is massive. She was up against so much. I was in northern Honduras, and palm plantations, palm oil plantations, as far as the eye could see, I'm not kidding, with little strangled poor villages in between. And the tourism, U.S., Canadian, basically, are gobbling up the coast. I was in northern Honduras along the Caribbean coast very, very rapidly. And villages that most of the villages, it's an incredibly poor country, and most of the villages are very, very destitute. Once in a while, you'd see a prosperous one, and it was the, what I'm trying to say is the local, on the local level, Honduras is run by drug traffickers completely, and their coffers are filled by U.S. war on drug money pouring into them. So it's a very, very sad situation, and it's amazing that people like Berta had the stamina to keep fighting as she did. And whatever we can do to support efforts by local and indigenous Hondurans, I think we should all try to do. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling. That's one aspect we hadn't got into, the war on drugs, which gets you into whole other areas, going back also to the time of the Contra war, the Contras, and the movement of cocaine through Central America into the United States, but we don't have time to talk about that. So we only have a few minutes left, Beverly. We started to get into what people can do in this urgent situation regarding specifically Gustavo Castro Soto, who's the comrade who was there and shot during the assassination of Berta, and who is being held against his will by the Hondurans. Can people contact the U.S. State Department? Can people contact the Honduran government? What would you recommend people doing?
Well, first of all, just to respond to that last caller, I think we can say it in about 30 seconds. Drugs are part of it. The U.S. government has been involved in allowing drugs to go down to Honduras and other countries to keep right-wing militaries supported. They have also been involved in drugs coming back to the U.S., and the man who broke that story was assassinated. It's all related to capital and who controls capital. This is all a war over capital, and Copin is very clear on this. Otros Mundos, run by Gustavo Castro, is very clear on this. We in the U.S. don't like to mention that word, but we must become very clear on this. What people can do is to get in touch with their congressperson and ask that he or she press the State Department, which right now is on the complete wrong side and is in cahoots with the Honduran government in keeping Gustavo, that the U.S. government press for the release of Gustavo and his safe return to Mexico, because there is a big fear that a car wreck will happen on his way back to Tegucigalpa and that he will not make it back home alive. That's a huge fear of everyone. They would love to see him dead. Again, he's a fly in the ointment of their plan. And if we lose Gustavo and Berta, oh my gosh, I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. So to call your congressperson and ask that they put pressure on the U.S. government to, there are three demands coming up from Honduras. One is to allow the safe and immediate passage of Gustavo Castro back to Mexico. Second is to call for an independent investigation of the assassination of Berta Cáceres, because right now it is all being manipulated. And third, to decriminalize Copin, because right now, as I mentioned, the effort is to criminalize them and get all the other leaders in jail for having killed Berta. So again, very quickly, that Gustavo Castro gets safe passage, immediate protection back to Mexico, that there is an independent investigation of Berta Cáceres' assassination, and that Copin not be criminalized. And all of this is on our website, or will be as soon as I get off the phone. Give me about 30 minutes, and our website is otherworldsarepossible.org.
Thank you so much, Beverly. It's been a very information-filled hour. Our guest has been Beverly Bell with Other Worlds, talking about the murder of her friend and comrade Berta Cáceres. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. We got to get out of here. This has been another intense hour, always for me and probably for you. And but we need to focus on what's going on and get activated ourselves. Stand up. Thanks so much for listening. My name is Paul. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holistic Tracking, Engaging All Our Senses, an experiential weekend workshop taking place March 11th through 13th at the Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. Holistic Tracking calls upon all senses, including the inner senses, to become a conscious part of the dynamic story of life on Earth. The workshop teaches effective observation, reading local tracks and signs to follow a trail, building stronger connections with wildlife and nature, and more. Again, that's Holistic Tracking, Engaging All Our Senses, a weekend workshop taking place March 11th through 13th at the Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. A link to register and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.